Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 361 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 2nd of February, 2018, as I record this. So I'm about to head off to the 20 books to 50K conference in Runnymede on Thames, and I'll report back on that next week. And I'm actually leaving a bit earlier today because the hotel's on the Thames Path, which is an awesome walkway along the side of the River Thames. So I'm going to go and get in a long walk along the river before being shut in a conference room all weekend. No doubt there will be pictures on Twitter at the Creative Pen, and probably there's a hashtag 20 books 50K. Or something like that. There are lots of authors going to this event. So yeah, I'm sure there'll be lots to talk about next week. So today I have an interview on balancing craft and commerce with Nathan Barry from ConvertKit. So definitely more of a business focus today. So I recently moved to ConvertKit for my email lists, and I'm really loving it. It has both simplified my email marketing, made it much easier for me to email out. And if you're on the list, you'll see I've been sending out my YouTube videos and transcripts in the last couple of weeks. And yeah, so I'm really finding it very useful. And Nathan is a very quiet entrepreneur. I like him for that. He's a real introvert with a real focus on serving the creative community. And we talk about why he moved from writing books into software, because he started out as an indie author and then later moved on, and some of his tips for email marketing, whether you're just starting out and you are going to set up your first form, your first list, or if you're ready to move to the next step, for example, automation, which is what I'm focusing on a lot. So I really enjoyed this chat, and it made me think a lot about my own business and really, well, I'll come back to this in a minute in my personal segment, but I hope you find today's show useful wherever you are at in your author journey. And excitingly, I am doing a webinar with ConvertKit, so you can see a demo of how to set up and use ConvertKit for your email list. So whether you want to set up a new one or you might consider moving, come along and see the demo Tuesday, 20th of February at 2 p.m. US Eastern, 7 p.m. UK, or register to get the recording, all the details and registration at thecreativepen.com/CK webinar. So CKWEBINAR. Right, no publishing news this week. It's a quiet week after last week's mega roundup. But yes, so my personal update. So I'm really thinking a lot at the moment about the next 10 years. So December 2018 marks the 10-year anniversary of the Creative Pen website. Now, I left my job in 2011, so it's not quite 10 years of full-time author entrepreneur, but 10 years of the Creative Pen is a bit of a bit of a mark. And it's incredible how fast the year is going. We're already in February. So I'm definitely thinking of what I want to do in the next 10 years. Now, that might be too much for some people, but what I did want to kind of encourage you is I am living the life that I dreamed of back in 2008. So what I designed in 2008 and wrote on a piece of paper, and I've shared the screen print before on the website, you know, that what I wrote down has come to pass. So if you decide what you want and then you put in consistent action over time, you will get there. And so I do have exactly what I designed, but I don't think I will be doing exactly the same stuff in 2028. So the question is, what do I want to design for 10 years' time, and how will I move towards that? So, for example, thinking about the screenwriting stuff, which I'm really, really enjoying. Like, I'm so surprised by how much I've enjoyed it. So I want to make screenwriting a much bigger part of my life. So what does that mean? Because we can't do everything. And constantly, I'm one of those people who is trying to do everything. And I know that that's not the way to be super successful in one area, because you're always spreading yourself too thin. So I'm really thinking about all these questions, and we humans need constant reinvention, especially change junkies like me. And of course, I'm also very aware that I'm kind of one of the old guard of self-publishing now, one of the older members of the indie author movement. And where I am in my journey, obviously, is a lot further along than a lot of people coming in now. So the types of things I think about are quite different. I was on a podcast yesterday, it's not gone out yet, but the guy asked me, how does it feel to be judged as someone who's self-publishing? Or are you scared that people are going to judge you for self-publishing? And I realized that I'm kind of 10 years past that moment, which is, and of course, I still have moments of self-doubt and need for validation. But the decision to be indie, that's something I made a long time ago. You know, and obviously I would do hybrid things if the appropriate stuff came up, but it's not something I'm chasing or going after. So it's something I'm just thinking about a lot at the moment. And I wanted to bring it up because I know many of you are at different places on your journey. And in fact, wherever you are, it's really good to start thinking, okay, so what do I want this to be in 10 years' time? Because we can achieve an incredible amount over 10 years. And given how fast the last month has gone, it's quite scary how fast 10 years can fly by. So there you go. There's your challenge from me this week. What do you want to achieve by 2028? And I'm starting to think about that. So you're going to hear a lot more about that in the next year, I'm sure. I've also started working on a book and a course on how to write nonfiction, because one of the things that I definitely want to do is reshuffle the creative pen around pathways. So there is a pathway for nonfiction authors and there is a pathway for fiction authors. There's a pathway if you want to make a living with your writing. So that's kind of what I want to do with the creative pen, but I need to create the content around that. So starting to do that. I've also booked time in my local co-working hub for my next round of dictation for the Arcane Thriller number 10. Yes, Morgan is coming to America. So very exciting. Actually, this reflection on the next 10 years brings me to another new podcast for authors, because there are lots of podcasts out there right now. And very excitingly, so Jay Thorne and Zach Bohannon have started the Author Career podcast. Now, Zach and Jay have been writing for years, but they only went full time in the last year. So if you're earlier on in the process than I am, and you want to hear from authors who are kind of new in their full-time careers, then the Author Career podcast, go check that out. But yeah, in terms of me feeling old, I am taking my flowery DMs to the conference this weekend. Yes, I'm still 15 and in my heart. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. Remember to let me know what you're doing while listening to the show. Tweet me at The Creative Pen or email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com. Or you can always leave a comment on the show notes. And of course, you can always find the backlist at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. Okay, so yes, thanks for all the comments around my interview on the self-publishing formula podcast. A number of people said that I got quite intimate and that it was quite a different feel from what you get on this show. I think it's because I was talking to James, and James was also kind of admitting his own issues around workaholism and not taking enough breaks. So we had a really interesting chat about The Healthy Writer. So you check that out on Self-Publishing Formula. And I was also on The Worried Writer this week, talking to the lovely Sarah Painter. So if anyone who gets anxiety around writing should definitely listen to Sarah's show, The Worried Writer. So yes, I know a lot of podcasts, so little time. But a huge thank you also to everyone who has posted a review of the podcast on iTunes, which means a lot. I actually just discovered a site that collates the reviews. And wow, you guys are awesome. I've taken loads of screen prints and you've made me feel really good about myself. So I'm very happy about that. Thank you. And of course, if you'd like to leave a review, I would love it. Thank you on whatever podcatcher you listen to. All right. So your tweets and emails this week. Rob C. Wheelworks
which is a great name, says, listening to the podcast on a big training day, getting ready for Ironman Texas. 4,000 meter swim done, just starting a 5-hour bike ride and then straight onto a 1-hour run. Maybe taking the healthy writer thing a step too far. That's definitely quite a lot of exercise, Rob. Good on you. Elisa Lorello says, been trying to write by dictation as per your recommendation. So far, I'm massively self-conscious and I feel like it's slowing down my writing time rather than speeding it up. And yeah, I would say absolutely. And I put a video up about dictation on YouTube this week, youtube.com/thecreativepen. And yes, if you're moving into dictation, you do feel self-conscious. It's a bit like doing audio like this or going to a conference or anything you do where you are sort of putting yourself out there and being a bit louder. I think that especially as writers, introvert writers, particularly making a noise can be difficult. But anyway, I do think it's worth getting past the self-conscious point because that's where you achieve things. So you will if you persist. But as someone who tried dictation several times and failed, and then the third time it really stuck because I switched to the handheld device and just dictate without looking at the screen, that makes a big difference to me. Bernie Anderson, writing and catching up on podcasts at the Story Coffee Roasters in beautiful, bustling Phnom Penh, Cambodia. Fantastic. And finally, L.E. Vera, listening to the podcast on Book Baby in Helsinki, Finland. Happy to see you on YouTube these days as I'm getting drawn to watching writing videos. And yes, it's so interesting. I'm doing a lot more videos because I'm feeling the same way. And I think part of that is actually having an iPad. It gives the iPad, I feel, is a way to consume video. Whereas my phone, my Kindle, my laptop is for making things. My phone is for little things and my Kindle is for reading. So I find the iPad, I'm watching a lot more videos, which is really interesting. And one more thing. Kate sent me an email saying she was reading Business for Authors and realized that even though her writing income will always be dwarfed by her salary, she can do much more than she thought to play with the business side of writing. And I really like this. She was talking about tending a garden with a solid, reliable oak tree in it, as in the day job, but also some very small and slow growing but beautiful flowers, which are her books. And I really liked that image. I hope that helps you. The idea of gardening and growing things, I think, is a very good metaphor for the creative life. We often put, and also for health, what I'm discovering with the health stuff is some of the practices I put in 6 months ago are only now starting to really show evidence in my physical body. And the same way with the garden of creativity, it can be very slow growing. But if you're thinking that long term, by the time you're retiring or give it another 10 years, that garden is blooming. And there are lots of bees making honey, etc. Stretch the metaphor a little more. Why not? Okay, so today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life. And another big shout out to Kobo for the great news of the deal with Walmart. Really looking forward to seeing how that's going to impact things. And if you want more information on how to use Kobo, Christine Munro, Chrissy, was on the Science Fiction and Fantasy Marketing Podcast, episode number 167, talking about some tips. Great show. So go and check that out. And so I'll play a word from Kobo in a minute. But thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Brian Hugenbrook, Becky Wade, Angela Johnson, Rob Nesbitt, Lisa Carter, and thanks to Marion Hill for upping his pledge. I really do appreciate your Patreon support, like the tweets and emails. It demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. On Patreon, you can support me with just a couple of dollars a month, a coffee a month, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which I'll do for February in a couple of weeks. So if you are a supporter, get your questions in. And if you have lost the link to the sheet, just message me on Patreon or email me and I'll send you the link, which happened this week for a few people. So you can ask questions on that. And you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, here's a word from Kobo Writing Life and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hey, Creative Pen listeners, I'm Christine Monroe, the Senior Manager of Kobo Writing Life, Kobo's free self-publishing platform and a proud longtime sponsor of this podcast. Did you know that you can distribute your ebooks to Overdrive with one click right in your Kobo Writing Life dashboard? You'll get the full 50% royalty on the library price you set, which is exactly what you would receive if you had a direct Overdrive account, but without the hassle of managing two accounts. It's the very best royalty rate that you'll see anywhere, and that's because Kobo and Overdrive are sister companies, and we're working together to help library users get the best ebooks from amazing authors like you. We're rolling out Overdrive distribution to all KWL users in the next few months, but if you want access right now, email us at writinglife@kobo.com and we'll get you all set. We encourage authors to set a library price at 1.5 to 3 times higher than their ebook list price, and you'll get 50% of that price every time a library purchases your book. And then your fans can borrow your ebook for free on Overdrive's new app, Libby. That's L-I-B-B-Y. That's right, you get paid 50%, and library users get to read for free. For more information about setting up a free Kobo Writing Life account, head to kobo.com/writinglife. Thanks so much, and I'll hand it back over to you, Joanna.
Today, I'm here with Nathan Barry. Hi, Nathan.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Nathan is the author of three books, a software designer, and the founder and CEO of ConvertKit, which helps creators earn a living through email marketing. Now, very exciting, Nathan. You started out in programming, but then you wrote several books, including Authority, which is all about self-publishing. So what did you learn from writing books that led you into starting your larger online business, ConvertKit?
Yeah, I think probably the first thing that I learned is that you could actually make money from writing books and self-publishing. I had this idea, you know, because I'm writing technical books, right? So my background is as a software designer. And so I was writing books on how to design software. And I was writing those books, not because I was like, oh, I'm going to put this out there and the sales are going to make me plenty of money. I was putting it out there because I was like, I want more consulting gigs. I want more people to say, oh, you know what? I want to hire Nathan to design my iPhone app, because he wrote the book on how to design iPhone applications. You know, so I was looking at it from that angle. So the first thing that surprised me the most is like, oh, you can actually make meaningful amounts of money from this. And then the second thing that surprised me is that after I wrote those two books, and I was just very, like, I guess, public and transparent with the whole process and the revenue that it made and all of that, as I started getting asked way more about, okay, how do you build an audience? How do you self-publish? How do you earn a living from your books? Then I was getting asked about how to design software. People were like, yeah, cool. That software thing is great. What's going on here? Like, how do you do this? I want to do that. And so then that really, you know, that's what I took into ConvertKit, is that, oh, there's a whole bunch of people who want to know how to do this and are already doing it, right? Because I think for most people outside of the worlds that you and I run in, you know, they're just like, you earn your living how? You know, you're a blogger. Oh, you're an author. Okay. That's not, you know, they're like, but you can't make money at that, right? But then once you get in our circles, you're just like, no, you absolutely can make money at it. And like, you know, you and I can list off dozens or hundreds of names of people who do it quite well. And so it's not even this crazy exception anymore. And so I think that really drew me to ConvertKit of like, okay, I can make tools just for these people exactly and not for like the general business world.
Mm. No, I think that's really interesting. And I mean, I'm particularly interested in why you chose self-publishing rather than, you know, following the model which most people do. Was it that you've always had the entrepreneurial control freakery that so many of us have? Or did you, you know, what did you see in self-publishing that made you want to choose that route originally?
Yeah, so I think something that I've had for a long time in my career is just expecting that no one will, I guess, choose me, maybe. And so I think a lot of people do this where they pre-reject themselves. They're like, I could ask for this. I could try to get a publishing deal. I could, you know, all of these things. But like, I mean, they would never choose my book. So like, let's not even ask, you know. And I've had to work a lot to overcome that of like, well, hold on. I'm not going to reject myself before I give someone else the opportunity to do it first, you know. And so just getting more comfortable asking for things. So like self-publishing, you know, you get to just like no one tells you, you're good enough to self-publish. I'll give you the self-publishing stamp of approval. You're allowed to self-publish. You know, no one says that. And so it's just like you just decide to do it and then you get to do it. So that was part of it. Another part is that I wanted it to go quickly. I didn't want to spend 2 years on this. I wanted to spend 9 months. Kind of when I set my mind to something, I just want to do it. And then the last part is the person who was the closest model for me in this world is Chris Guillebeau. I came across his stuff pretty early on, went to his World Domination Summit conference. I think I've been, I don't know how many, there's been seven of them, and I've been to the most recent six. I missed the very first one. But he just had this great example of, you know, publishing books and guides and courses and or self-publishing them to his own audience. And so I was like, that sounds great. I'll just, whatever Chris says, I'll do that. Mm. And that's worked out pretty well in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's interesting. But then I've been reading your yearly roundups, which I do as well. And I love reading these because you can really see changes over time, obviously. And you've had children, so there's physical changes, new people in your life. But what was interesting to me was in 2014, you kind of posted the up and down graph of your income from info products at around the time you decided to pivot. So it's interesting because you said you were surprised that you could make money with info products, but obviously there came a point where you were like, there's a trade-off. So was it like the hamster wheel of creation, or what made you switch from writing, publishing into software?
Yeah, so I wanted... There's a couple of things. My background's in software design. And so I wanted to design software, not just teach people how to design software. Mm. And so I found this little bit of time where I was loving building an audience and all this other stuff, but was starting to get a little frustrated by, I was like, oh, I'm teaching stuff that I haven't spent as much time doing. You know, I haven't opened Photoshop or Sketch or written code about this stuff, you know, recently. And so I wanted to get back to doing that. I also wanted a new challenge. I felt like, you know, there's certainly people who had done self-publishing and information products far better or far more successfully than I had. But at the same time, I was like, okay, I know how to make $250,000 a year doing this without any new challenge. You know, I had learned the skills to do it on that level. And I looked at the people who were taking the revenue a lot further. You know, they ran these businesses doing $1 million a year or something crazy like that. And I looked at their businesses and it wasn't something that I wanted to recreate. I didn't want to have seven employees to help me run this course business with giant launches. And then, you know, this like one big open and closed launch every year. And then the rest of the year, I have all these payroll costs to worry about. And I just didn't want to run that kind of business. So I was looking for a new challenge to get back into software and to solve a problem that I had where I was using MailChimp and I was frustrated by it. And I was like, okay, I can do better. There's a little bit of, you know, arrogance in there that I think most entrepreneurs have in some way where you're like, really? No, I can do better than this. Whether it's I can write a better book or I can build a better company or solve this problem better. So that got me into it. And then for me, it's a problem of focus. For the first almost 2 years of ConvertKit, I tried to do both at the same time. And it took me a long time to learn that I'm just not good at that. There are some people who can multitask lots of things. They're like, oh, I'm writing this book. I am doing all these other things. I'm guest posting on these blogs. I'm just doing everything. And I'm like coaching my kids' soccer team at the same time. Like, come on, why can't you be as awesome as I am? And I'm just not good at that. I was trying to start a software company and I was even trying to write new books, but I was trying to continue this, all the current books, relaunch them, all that kind of thing. And I just couldn't balance it well. And so I made the decision to quit the books and let them coast down to whatever they were going to drop off to, and to focus entirely on ConvertKit. And it ended up being a really good decision, but there was definitely times where, you know, financially in the short term after making that decision, it was not great, but in the long term, you know, it worked out really well. I think in my latest, review post, you know, I have those graphs of like, here's the, information product revenue. And it goes from like 15,000 to 100,000 the next year to 250,000, you know, and then it like goes down the other side, quite a bit. And you're like, oh, that graph looks terrible. Like no one would ever want that for their business. And then when you could like, the next graph, I overlay it with ConvertKit's revenue. And the numbers on the info product side are so small that they barely even register on the graph compared to the... And so it's like, okay, that was the trade-off. And so if there's something that you really want to go after, I would just say, make sure to focus. Like get clear on what that is and then clear up enough space so that you can actually focus on it.
I think what's interesting is you talk about modeling there. You've broken away from what Chris Guillebeau was doing, in the, you know, that model is there. But one of the things you have done, which does model him and is, I think, fantastic, I've been watching your videos, you have a craft and commerce conference, which I wanted to ask you about, because you have made creativity part of ConvertKit. And you've got craft and commerce, which is what I believe in, absolutely. But many creatives struggle with mingling creating and doing, like you're still doing, but also with money. So how, or I guess, what are your tips for managing the balance between craft and making a good living?
Yeah, so I think there's two sides of it and you can go wrong on either extreme. Like on one end you have, and I think we've all come across them, the internet marketers in the maybe the sleazy sense of the term. And I think of these people as they're just, you know, they're looking for one weird trick to make money on the internet. You know, they're like, as easy as possible, how can I make money? Like, oh, Facebook ads are working super well for you. Okay, I'll do that. You know, there's no thought to the art that they're creating, the craft. It's just 100% about as much money as quickly as possible. And then you get the people on the other end who, you know, they're the artists who, you know, they might describe, they're like, oh, I would never sell out. You know, or I would never, you know, I'm just, it's 100% about the craft. I'm going to toil away in my studio for absolutely as long as it takes. And it just, it's so unfortunate that you can't earn a living as an artist. And you get these two different worlds and I just want to bring them together. Mm-hmm. And I want to say, okay, what if you cared really deeply about who your art is for and create, like putting in the work? You're not looking for the shortcuts. You're not looking for how can I get to this as quickly as possible. You're like, how can I spend the next 5 years, 10 years becoming really good at this one skill? And then how can I get it out to as many people as possible? So it really, whether it's teaching them something else or exposing them to art or great stories or whatever, like get it in front of as many people as possible. And then understand that artists should be really, really well paid. You know, I really like some examples from Jeff Goins and his book, Real Artists Don't Starve, which, by the way, is one of my favorite book titles of all time.
And Jeff's been on the show to talk about that book. So, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, he just talks about how artists, you know, in the Renaissance and earlier, like, were wealthy individuals, right? Like, you're contributing something meaningful. You're incredibly good at what you do, and you should earn a living from it. And so the conference is all about bringing these two ideas together. And so no one's like, hey, here's this one weird trick that I used to double my income last year. They're like, you know, you have someone like James Clear giving a talk about, these are the habits that I crafted over time that enabled me to write on the schedule, that enabled me to build this audience, that enabled me to make this income. And so the more I can get people to bring those ideas together, like, that just makes me so happy.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. Now, you mentioned focus, but you also mentioned that the early years, I guess, of ConvertKit that were a bit of a dip. So what are some of your mindset attitudes for getting through that dip? Because many of the authors listening are kind of in that dip. They want the craft, but they also want the money. But we both know there's a period where there isn't both. It is a slow burn. So how did you get through those early years of no money?
Yeah. I think the first thing to realize is that anything worth doing is going to take far longer than you think. Far longer than, you know, even you're like conservatively estimating how long it's going to take. We have this idea at ConvertKit that, you know, we put on our t-shirts and posters and laptops and everything else. And it's just create every day. And, you know, just putting this consistent work in. So for me in writing, that's writing 1,000 words a day, you know, and I'm just going to, that's something I got learned from Chris Guillebeau and adopted. And, you know, my longest streak was like 650 days in a row of writing 1,000 words a day. Turns out if you do that, like you can push through a lot of stuff. There's actually this post on Reddit that I came across just a couple weeks ago that I really enjoyed. And it was someone talking about, they were talking about overcoming depression and, you know, like, and complacency where you're just like, I feel like I didn't accomplish anything. But they had this concept that they talked about of a non-zero day. And I really liked that because it was like, you're not trying to accomplish a lot. You're not trying to make a lot of progress on your book, but you just anything more than zero. And then you line up a bunch of non-zero days in a row. It could be that you wrote 10 words. I don't know. It could be that you spent 20 minutes writing down title ideas or whatever else. But like, if you're really struggling to get started, then, you know, you want to line up a bunch of those non-zero days. And then later you might raise your standards. You're like, okay, I'm going to try to write 100 words a day. But it's that like creating really consistently. And then my friend Sean McCabe, his site is seanwest.com. He has that create every day idea, taking it further. And he has this poster that he does, or I think a hand illustration and stuff. But he just talks about show up every day for 2 years. And because there's a lot of things where it's like, I want to do that. It's like, okay, do you want that enough that you're willing to work on it every single day for 2 years? And like often the answer is no. And then you're like, okay, well maybe it's not worth starting. And people are like, I think I can accomplish this. And so I'm going to do it. And they're like, and I often have this time horizon. Like, oh, I can get that done in 2 months, you know? And it's like, okay. And it's worth doing if you can do it in 2 months, but is it still worth doing if it was going to take 2 years? And so when I hear people, they're like, I tried to write a book, but it didn't work out for me. Or I tried to start a blog, but I didn't get any traffic. And I'm like, that's great. How long did you work on it? And they're like, oh, I worked on it every weekend for like 3 months. And I'm like, okay, let's try something a little different. Every day for 2 years. And then you're allowed to come to me and say like, look, writing a book is not for me. Blogging is not for me. You know, this isn't working out. I genuinely tried. But you have to set those expectations correctly. And then the software world, for me, it was just, I'm going to make sure that ConvertKit is better in some way. Maybe I fixed a little bit of copy so it's more clear. Maybe we redesigned something, built a new feature. But it's better every day at the end of the day than it was at the beginning of the day. And that's my milestone. And, you know, and it's just create every day.
I think I also really love, because my husband's been a coder, and I know some people believe that only like writing fiction is creative. But when you say create every day, you also mean coding as part of creativity, don't you? So, and I know some people listening won't really understand that, but can you just explain from a techie perspective, like why is coding so creative?
Yeah, because I think of a lot of creativity as solving problems, or really just making anything, but coding particularly is about solving problems and, you know, how you're going to creatively solve this problem so that it works efficiently. It's easy to understand. It reads clearly. I think a lot of writers, Jason Fried talks about how they try to hire people who are clear writers and good writers, because if you're a good writer, you're a clear thinker. Cause that's a skill, you know, to be able to translate these ideas and put them down succinctly. And so they even want their programmers to be good writers, because even though it's a different skill, it points this clear thinking. And so being able to clearly express these ideas, whether you're doing it in words or in code, it's the same concept. But yeah, I apply the idea of being a creator to pretty much everything. So like this weekend, I got a new table saw out in my shop in the garage, and You know, I was out there building stuff, and my best days are the ones when I make something. So whether it's writing a blog post or like this weekend, I made a new cutting board, you know, out of wood, and like just whatever it is, I just like to make stuff, and I apply it in pretty much every industry.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And then one of the things, I mean, we all know that when you start a business, when you build a business, you are going to be working quite a lot of hours, but you have a young family. You know, like you said, you've got these other things. You play soccer or football, as we call it over here. So how do you manage how have you managed, I guess, in the difficult times, the balance between having your young family, you know, your relationships, your own creativity with building this basically multi-million dollar business?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing is I work from home, and, you know, a minute ago, you probably heard a three-year-old not having the happiest Monday afternoon. And so there's some of that where, like, you know, I'd at times be teaching a webinar or something and be like, and that's August. He's not super happy, you know, like, so working from home has its pros and cons for that, right? Of I can be around, be a part of family life, a lot more than I would be able to otherwise. Like, I just gain a lot of time just by killing off a commute in the first place. But then the other thing is I can put in time when other people aren't willing to work, or, you know, you normally have gone home for the day. And so kids go to bed by 8 or 8:15 at night. And that leaves me, you know, a good hour or 2 hours. The other thing is I think you just have to be more disciplined overall. I will tend to write down what I'm going to do next. So like prep my work, like as I'm wrapping up for the day, I will write down clearly what I'm going to do the next time I come back to the computer. So when I come back to this computer, I'll look and I'm not like, oh, what should I do? Let me catch up on everything. It's just like, no, it's clearly stated what I should be doing next. So I can just start that. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that I'll often fit in on a Saturday morning or, you know, some of those other times. So yeah, I definitely put in a lot of hours, but, I don't know, you get to balance going and doing things like, going to the park or whatever else at like 2 p.m. with the kids when everyone else is at school and work. And I'm allergic to crowds just in general, not actually, but you know, and so whenever other people are like, oh, everyone's going to the lake on a Saturday, like you better believe I'm there on a Friday morning with the kids, or, you know, that kind of thing.
It's all right. You're on a podcast with a load of introverts. So
yes,
we get that. So then I wanted to kind of switch gears and ask you about ambition, because I think it's another word like money that many creatives struggle with. Like, on the one hand, yeah, I want to win a literary prize and be like on the stage with Stephen King. And then on the other hand, it's like, oh no, but I mustn't want that. So with you, I mean, you clearly, to take things up a level, you have to be ambitious on some level to drive through those sort of thresholds that you have. So how have you balanced the ambition, I guess, the positive and negative sides of ambition in yourself?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because I think the things to balance would be ambition, contentment, gratitude, you know, and everything along those lines, because it's so easy to be constantly pushing for more, you know, whether it's from book sales or software revenue, you know, it's never enough. We're always trying to hit a higher level. And you're like, really? It's already exceeded my wildest dreams. Why is this not enough? And so I think it's challenging once you've hit some level of success to keep creating and keep pushing yourself from a position of contentment. Like, if ConvertKit did not grow at all from now on, would I be content? And I think what I've come to is what I really want out of it is I want to keep learning and I want to keep growing and I want new challenges. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that I need more revenue or more Twitter followers or something like that, but I do need more challenges. And those other things, the audience sizes or the revenue, tends to be, I guess, just a way of keeping track of the new challenges that are coming up. And so I think when you approach it that way, you can be really grateful for the success that you have and feel content and still feel ambitious. Because you don't want that contentment to drive, a lack of motivation. And none of us want to become the person like, yeah, I had the best-selling book. And you know what? Now I'm going to go to the beach and hang out because those royalties pay me enough money. And, you know, like we didn't sign up to be writers or creators or entrepreneurs to get to a certain income level and then check out. And so then, yeah, you've got to keep pushing those limits and you have to keep learning. But at the same time, you have to do it with gratitude. So ambition and gratitude together, I think, are really, really powerful. And then you don't get to get trapped in this frustrating cycle.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's the fun part too, right? It's learning something new is the fun part. Like I'm learning about screenplays at the moment, writing a screenplay adaptation. Like it may never make me any revenue, but I'm learning a lot. So it's fun, right, to keep learning.
Yeah. And I think if you add things, like that sounds like it's putting you fairly far outside of your comfort zone. Like you might've been able to, you know, write in the style that you used to and publish that in the types of books that you're used to. And you're like, okay, I might push my comfort zone by 5% or 10%. You know, you're like edging it. And then you're like, you know what? I'm going to go write a screenplay. And people are like, you don't know anything about that. You know, or like all of these things. And you're like, that's okay. I think the creatives that probably are going to struggle the most are the ones who are really, really afraid to fail. Mm-hmm. Like if you use your success already as like, who's someone? I think of Andy Weir. He wrote The Martian, right? Insanely successful book, like just wildly successful. And, he might feel all of this pressure for his second book to be absolutely incredible, right? Because he's the guy who wrote The Martian. He can't come out with a mediocre book now. Whereas maybe if he had a mediocre book and then he had a little bit better of a book, like, so you can either approach it two ways. You can say the success that I've had is going to paralyze me from creating further because the bar is so high. Mm. Or you could approach it and be like, yeah, that worked out well. Let's go try something crazy and ambitious. And if it fails, it's totally fine. Because I'm the guy who wrote The Martian. So like, you know, I at least have that success. And so you can approach it two different ways, and one paralyzes you and keeps you from creating, and the other like gives you this freedom to try totally new things. You know, another example would be like George W. Bush, the former president of the U.S., taking a painting. You know, is his painting amazing? No, but like he achieved becoming president, and now he's painting. Like he's not worried about failing at painting because he's like, no. Like check that box. Now I can move on to something totally different. And he's not thinking people are like, whatever you think of his presidency, no one's like, oh, because you achieved that high level, now you should also be good at this totally other thing. He has no fear of failure. And so he's pursuing something that he wants to.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it's so interesting. That's why I love J.K. Rowling, because, I mean, she could just be resting in her castle, whatever, on her pillow. But no, she keeps writing, she keeps producing because she's a creator and she'll never be done. We're never done until we die, right? That's also the fun part. Let's circle around to ConvertKit, because you've mentioned a number of times solving problems and, you know, serving customers as well. So there are a lot of email providers out there. So what problem did you see in the market that led you to build ConvertKit?
Yeah, so there were a couple of problems. And I was using MailChimp at the time. And first, I was completely shocked that email marketing works so well, because it's been around forever. I launched my books. This was in 2012. I launched my first book and launched to an email list of 800 people, and nearly all the sales came from that email list. And I went to a friend of mine who'd been doing online marketing for a long time. And I was like, I don't know if you know this, but it wasn't Twitter or Facebook or Instagram that drove the sales. It was email. Like it drove all these sales. And you know, email drove more than all of the social platforms combined. And he's like, uh-huh. We've known that since like 2001. And so I was really late to the party there. But once I learned that, I just kind of became obsessed with it. And then I started learning all these best practices, and I wanted to implement everything that I could to, like, you know, if this is working and I have no clue what I'm doing, how well could it work if I actually applied best practices? And that was things like tagging your customers, or, you know, they're really common now, but back then kind of a new thing was content upgrades, or, you know, putting something basically, if you, at the end of your blog post, having a call to action or an email opt-in that was specific to that post, get a higher conversion rate. And if you try to do that in MailChimp, you'd end up with all these different lists where to do that for every single one, you had to create a new list. And I was like, oh, okay, that's no problem. And then I realized that MailChimp was charging me. If the same person was on each list, they'd charge me twice. And I'm like, wait a second. Now I understand why your support team recommended that I do this. You know, and then someone would buy and I'd put them on a third list. And then I was like, okay, no, we need tags for this. We need, you know, there's a bunch of these problems that we can solve. And it was really just a matter of me realizing, oh, MailChimp and all these other providers are built for small businesses. And as much as I'm a small business, like the, I think the US Department of Commerce defines small business as zero to 500 employees.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a pretty big range. Like ConvertKit's a pretty good sized business, I feel like, and we have 30 employees. And so like we're still at the absolute bottom end of that small business range. So I was like, well, if MailChimp and others are serving small businesses, that's such a broad range. And that explains why they don't have all these things that are best practices for our industry, because our industry is less than 1% of who they're trying to serve. And so that's where I was like, okay, I can solve my own problems, build the tool that I want, and then, you know, rally people together who have the same problems. And then I get to like not feel bad about saying no to people. Like someone will come along who, you know, they have this enterprise software business and they're like, oh, we can use ConvertKit if you just build this functionality. And so thanks, but it's not for you, you know, go use something else, because, you know, ConvertKit is email marketing for creators. And so as creators, we have a different set of problems, and I just think we can solve them better.
And I guess the sort of big question, because I know a lot of authors have resistance towards email marketing because, you know, it doesn't feel creative to do emails. That's just it. I think that's what it comes down to. I know I'm resistant to doing emails because I'm like, oh, well, I'd rather be writing a story or something like that. So, you know, what can you tell people to sort of convince them that email marketing can fit under that creative banner?
Right. So it's just a different media type, you know, it's written words. The first problem that I think a lot of creatives make when they get into email marketing is that they like really focus on design, you know, and they think, oh, I'm going to design a great looking email. But that's like using the weirdest canvas. I don't know, like email is a terrible canvas to design on. It'd be like painting on cardboard or something, you know, it's just like, it's not any good for it. Email is for writing. And it's for telling stories, and it's for connecting with people, because you get this really personal connection with, you know, whether you have 20 people on your email list or 20,000, you know, they're signing up so that you can get into their inbox every single day or every week or every month. And so if you treat it that way as like this little group of people who want to hear about whatever you're working on and get the inside scoop, they want to hear about your ideas that aren't fully fleshed out. You know, like you're supposed to be working on your novel and you had this idea for this other short story and you're like, oh, but I can't, they would just distract from the novel. No, you can write that short story that's 3 pages long and send it out to your email list and they'll love it, because they're not just a fan of your writing. They want to be a fan of you and they want to know the story behind it. And so for me, it ends up being this community that I can talk to and say, this is what's going on. This is how the book is coming. This is what I'm up to. And it ends up being this creative outlet, because I think I lower the standards. And I don't hold it to this super high standard where I have to be perfect or anything like that. It reminds me of a quote. I can't remember the lady's name, Sandra something. But she talks about how if you hit writer's block, lower your standards and keep writing. And I think about that because I think a lot of people, you know, hit some kind of writer's block when it comes to email. Like, what should I send? What, you know, I got to get this perfect. You know, I have to have the perfect sales copy on my page to sell this book or whatever else. And it's like, no, you don't. You know, be genuine, create, like, and say, like, I've had launch emails where I'm promoting a book that I came out with that said, hey, I think you'll like this. Here's why. And it's like a couple sentences. And then here's where to go buy it. There's no perfectly crafted sentences that I'm absurdly proud of, or like, I think the wordplay is just perfect. You know, it's just like, here's why I made this. I think you'll like it. If you do, let me know. If not, let me know what I can do better on it. Mm. And if you take that approach, then it just feels like you're using email as a way to share whatever you created with your friends, rather than like perfectly crafting every interaction or worrying that you're doing it wrong, you know?
That's interesting. And I, as you're saying that, I'm wondering if authors particularly have an issue with this because we use language and because we want our language to be perfect and polished and we're used to working with editors. I mean, maybe I'm just thinking now for myself, maybe that's part of my resistance, but like you're saying, it doesn't have to be that way. Maybe it's more like talking rather than finished prose.
Yeah, for sure. And along those lines, I think writing emails, you could even talk them out and record them. Seth Godin talks about how no one ever complains about talker's block and how that's not a thing, because, you know, I think the biggest thing about it is if I say something poorly and I can see that slight look of confusion on your face, you don't understand it, I can just try to say it again better. You know, it's much more of a stream of consciousness. I can just get these ideas out there and improve upon them as they go. And whereas writer's block, everyone's trying to get it perfect and they write it out and, you know, then they hit the backspace key a bunch of times. And so I think with email, you get to try out these ideas. You're like, have this idea and you write it out and send it out to the list and say, what do you think? And then, like for me, you know, at some point in the future when I write another book, a lot of the content from it will be ideas that I've tried out with my email list beforehand, you know, of trying to like flesh this out of what do I think on this? I have an idea, but it's not fully formed. So let me write it. Now it's a little more concrete. Let me send it to the list. Let me have some discussions over email. People have some other stories that they share. And then, you know, 6 months later, when it comes time to write the book, or who knows when I'll actually write my next book. But, you know, then this idea will be a lot more fully formed. So I think of it as a playground. And then it's just fun. No one goes to like a playground at a park and is like, am I playing correctly? Let me make sure that I'm playing the right way, because otherwise that would be terrible. You know, they're just like, I don't know, I just have fun. That's the way I see email.
Yeah, no, I love that. Now we are almost out of time, but and we're going to do a webinar. So I'll link to that in the introduction and everything. But just give me two things. So if people are new authors and they're going to start on ConvertKit, what is a particularly good thing for them? And then if they have a list already, but they want to take things to the next level, what is one thing that's good for them?
Yeah. Okay. So if you're just getting started, then the first thing that you want to do is start gathering email subscribers. So a lot of people get hung up on what exactly I would send to them, all this stuff. Okay, we can cross that bridge when we come to it. But like, first start growing the list. And so put something out there and say, either join this list and the first thing you'll get is a sample chapter of the upcoming book, or, you know, a lot of famous authors, I think it was author Adam Grant, who he wrote, I'm spacing on all the books that he wrote, but he's written a lot of great books in like the research and nonfiction space. His newsletter is just, you know, once a month, his ideas that he sends out. And he's just saying, hey, if you like my books, you'll also like this. And there's not like a strong sales pitch for the newsletter, but it's sign up, get some more details, et cetera. So start with that, you know, just a form or a page on your site, you know, yoursite.com/newsletter. And it's just sign up to get whatever I'm working on. I like what Derek Sivers does. He's written a bunch of books. He hasn't written very many books, but a book, Anything You Want, which is one of my favorites. He has, I think, sivers.org/now. And he just takes the approach of like, this is what I'm working on. you know, and that's an easy thing to tell someone. And if I'm a fan of your work somewhere else, then yeah, I want to know what you're working on now. And so you can take that approach. So you could say, sign up for my email list to hear what I'm working on most recently. And once a month, you keep people updated. So that would be the easiest thing if you're just dipping your toes in the water. If you have a list already, then, you know, and you have subscribers coming in, then it's time to add a little bit of automation to it. And don't go crazy with these automated launches and all this stuff. There's a time for that down the road if you want to. But for now, just think, okay, if someone's brand new to my work and they sign up to my email list, what is it that I want them to know? What ideas are fundamental to what I believe that you should know before you read the blog post that I wrote yesterday? You know, and so there's that post that I wrote 2.5 years ago that you should probably read to understand how I see the world. Or maybe it's just some of my best work, like that short story, you know, that's buried in the archives that I'm so proud of. We'll put that in an email sequence so that after they sign up the next day, they get that in their inbox. And then 2 days later, they get another one of your favorite things. And then 2 days later, there's a link to Amazon to go buy that book, you know, so that you're automating some of those things and making sure that your new subscribers who are discovering you this week are getting the stuff that you put out years ago and are getting a pitch to go buy your product. And, you know, because let's face it, that's part of your art. And we're all about combining, you know, like the craft and the commerce. And so you have to actually ask for the sale. And if you do it in an automated way where your emails, you know, then you, only have to, I guess, get over that feeling of selling one time as you put it in the automated sequence, and then ConvertKit will do that for you. And you don't have to be like, oh man, I got to sell today again. You know, you just wrote that once and it'll just do the work for you going forward.
I do love that. And I mean, I've recently moved over to ConvertKit, which is why you're on the show. And I moved over because I was so frustrated mainly with the tagging and segmentation elsewhere, which is definitely a more developed thing once you have a list, but it does make it very easy. And I think also it is a very friendly system. Like, you don't have to be techie. It looks like, it just looks like, I don't know, I hate saying like MS Word because that's complicated, but if you can type on MS Word, you can use ConvertKit, right? It's not technical in that way.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah, we've worked really hard on making it easy to use. And I kind of have this unique advantage in having an entire background in software design and user experience and all that. And then also being a creator and just saying, you know what, I'm going to build what I want and kind of nothing else. And then so combining those two things has been special. And so now it's fun to be able to serve so many creators. But a little over 17,000 creators using ConvertKit and paying for ConvertKit. So
yeah, well, I'm a very happy one of them. So tell us where people can find you and ConvertKit online.
Yeah, so ConvertKit is just at convertkit.com. One thing there that I would check out is go check out Tradecraft. It's linked to from the homepage. That's our monthly online magazine, and we cover a different topic every month. So whether it's how to create your first product, the one that comes out this week is all about how to teach webinars, if you've ever thought about doing that yourself. We cover a different issue every month. We like have photographers and illustrators working on all of that. So it's a pretty high quality production. And of course, go sign up for ConvertKit. But then on my site, if you want to know what I'm up to, it's just nathanberry.com. I write a little more often now than I did before. And maybe the year in review post would be a fun place to start. That's what I just published. So I do one every year, have for the last 7 years now. And so I think they're really fun because they're a little snapshot of like not only an update in life, but like a snapshot of your worldview and what you thought was possible at that time and like your outlook on life at the time. So I think they're the most fun.
They are great. So thanks so much for your time, Nathan. That was brilliant.
Thanks for having me.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Nathan Barry today. And remember, you can join me and Issa Adney from the ConvertKit team for a live webinar on how to set up and use ConvertKit for your email list. Tuesday, 20th of February at 2 p.m. US Eastern, 7 p.m. UK, or register to get the recording. All the details at thecreativepen.com/CK webinar. or all the links are in the show notes as usual. So coming up next week, I'll be back talking about the writing craft. I have an interview with Becca Puglisi, who is the co-author of The Emotion Thesaurus and a number of other thesauri, I think the plural is, which are fantastic for using emotion in our writing, which is useful whether you write fiction or nonfiction. And in fact, it might be even more important in nonfiction because you need to move people. As Maya Angelou once said, people will forget what you said and what you did, but they won't forget how you made them feel. So I will be back next week talking emotion. Have a wonderful writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.